to another episode of the 10-4 show on Channel 9. In this episode, I want to take you through a quick tour of the F-sharp language. F-sharp is a new addition to our family of managed languages coming with Visual Studio 2010. There's a lot to really dig into with F-sharp. In future videos, we'll dig into some of the Visual Studio integration of F-sharp. But right now, let's just take a quick, very simple look at the language itself. So here I have F-sharp Interactive that I've brought up, kind of the REPL of F-sharp, and I just want to toy around here for a bit and show you some of this stuff in action. F-sharp, the fundamental data types that it has, are the same fundamental types that you would expect from any modern programming language, as well as some other additional ones. For instance, we have integers, of course, like the value 32. We have floats, like we would expect. We can do exponential notation if we want. You can see there. Some of the other ones, we of course have strings, and we have characters. Everything that you need. One of the other ones is list, of course, so I can have a list of integers if I want, like this. Or I can also, of course, have a list of strings. One thing you'll notice, let's try this. You'll notice that this fails. So it was expecting a list of integers, but then I gave it a string. So some people, a common misconception when they're actually digging into F-sharp is that F-sharp, they mistakenly take for a dynamic language or dynamically typed language. Well, it is not. It's very much a statically typed language. It just takes heavy use of type inference. So you'll notice when I actually created the list, I wasn't saying what type of list. That's automatically inferred based on usage. So, which is really cool when it comes to writing expressive F-sharp code. One of the other fundamental types of data structures that makes F-sharp particularly powerful of language is a first-class tuple. So I can have a tuple of integers, and just like anything else, it can be any other data type. You can see I can have that. And I could have tuples of strings and so on. And it's not limited to just two values. I could also have a bunch of them in there. So an arbitrary number that I can actually have in tuples. As we'll see later, tuples actually become very powerful when we combine it with another feature called pattern matching. One of the other things is F-sharp itself, as is mentioned in the overview description of this video, is a functional programming language. Technically, it's a multi-paradigm programming language. But in this video, I want to dive into the functional nature of it, this idea of functions being first-class citizens. Just like anything else, when I was declaring those fundamental data types, I also have a fundamental data type for functions. Let's say I want to add 3 to a given number. I can use that fun keyword, which has an anonymous function, and then bind it. And you can see it's actually a function that takes an integer and returns an integer. So that, in of itself, is really nice, but, you know, there's a lot of more stuff that you may need to do. Of course, we can bind values to identifiers. So now I have this value A that can actually represent the number 42. I can say A plus 32, and you'll see returns the value of 74. What's interesting, there's a reason that I called them bind them to identifiers rather than bind them to variables. In most programming languages, when you learn the concept of a variable, the reason it's called a variable is that it can vary over time. Well, in F-sharp, by default, everything is immutable. So if I actually create, let A equals 52, and I reassign it, that's not actually putting 52 in the same box. It's not varying that variable. What it's doing is creating a new variable that also has the name A, and then putting the new value into that. So the old value, A equals 42, is still around, but just no longer able to access it. You can actually see this, since I can do let A equal hello, a string, and you can see it is valid, it returns the value of A as being a string. So it's just a new identifier by A. You can, of course, do this with functions, too. So let's say that add 3 function. I can say let add 3 equal, and then use that anonymous syntax to do that. At the core of it, this is what defining functions actually do in F sharp. You're binding a first class function data type to an identifier. So then I can call this function like we would expect. Let's add 3 to the number 4, and it returns 7. The thing is, that syntax that we used for the add 3 method is obviously not very intuitive syntax. So we can use syntax that we're used to with other programming languages, where I can say let add 3 has a parameter x, and I'm going to return x plus 3. So it has the same signature, and then, of course, I can call it. I can call it with other identifiers. That won't work because I redefined a. Let's redefine it to be 42, and then add 3 to a. You can see 45. Now, what's particularly powerful about this first-class function is what you can do when you dig into this a little more. Let's dig into, let's say I have let add two numbers, and I pass in an xy, x plus y. Thing is, programmers, as we're used to imperative and object-oriented languages today, you would think of this as a function that takes two parameters and returns the value. So it takes two integers and returns an integer. So that way I can say add two numbers. I can say 3 and 4, and it returns 7. But what's different about this is that technically in F sharp, add two numbers isn't a function that takes two numbers or takes two parameters. It's a function that takes one parameter and returns another function that accepts the other parameter. Another way that we could actually declare this is that let two numbers equals fun x, fun y, that returns x plus y. Oops. Let's use that with the correct identifier name. And then we can use it the same way we did before. Now what's interesting, this is really a big thing to get your head wrapped around. And it's something that enables a very cool type of feature that's not possible in other programming languages, especially object-oriented languages, at least out of the box. And that's this idea of partially applied functions, or curried functions. So remember that add 3 method where we had something like that and we returned x plus 3. Well, we can define this another way. Let's look at two numbers, the add two numbers function. Let's call add two numbers, but we'll just call it with one parameter. Before, in your languages that you might be used to using today, that would actually fail. But you can see here it succeeds because it's perfectly valid. What we've done is it's returning another function that's waiting to hear the second result or the second parameter before it actually calculates. So that let add 3 method, we could actually say let add 3 equals add two numbers 3. Now if we say let add 3 to 5, you can see it returns 8. So when we created this let add 3 and call add two numbers with a single parameter, it's returning a function that's waiting around for the second parameter. So technically in F sharp, you can think of it like there's no such thing as a function that accepts more than one parameter. Even if we were to use this type of syntax to say add two numbers, like we may have been used to using in other programming languages, what this actually does, it's very interesting. X and Y, it's not two separate parameters. Technically, add two numbers actually accepts a tuple, which then returns an int. So you can see if I say add two numbers, say 3 and 4, you can see that it's not a function. This add two numbers, it expects to call add two numbers with a single parameter, which is that 3, but then it doesn't return a function that can be applied to the second parameter of 4. So if I were to declare it that way, then I would actually have to say 3 and 4 like this. Oops. Excuse me. And then that would work. So some other things to dig into. One of the things I want to dig into is this concept of lists and how lists are actually implemented in F#. So let's create a list of integers. I'm going to do just 3 of them for now. You can see I have my list. I'm going to go ahead and print it. Same thing. 34, 52, 53. There are some built-in functions off of list where I can say list.hd, which is the head of the list. I'll pass it my list. You can see, okay, the head is 34, but check this out. List.tl, which is the tail of the list. I'm going to call list.tl, pass the list in. So the tail of my list is another list that then is 52, 53. Any Lisp heads that are out there that have spent time working in Lisp or Scheme, this is going to be very familiar or comfortable territory for you. So going back to my list, I have 34, 52, 53. Let's say I want to get the second item. Well, one way that I can do that is I'm actually going to get the head of the tail. And you can see then I get 52, that middle item. So this makes lists very powerful when you combine this with pattern matching and recursion, which is particularly very, very, very cool stuff. So let's say I actually have a list of integers. Let's define something. For the sake of it, this function's actually already defined, but let's define it ourselves. Let's say sum, and then we're going to pass in a list of integers. Then I'm going to use this match syntax. So I'm going to say match L my list with, if I was just given an empty list, then I want to return 0. Else, if I was giving a head and a tail, I want to return the head, the value of the head, head plus, let's call sum of the tail. Now, if I actually say sum, let's provide 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you can see I get the value 15. So one of the things, one of the lines that may be a little confusing to you is the head and the tail line. So another way that you can actually declare lists is a list operator, which is that operator. So I could actually use this to say 1, 2, 3, 4. And what it does is allow you to append to the list or put two items together. So here you could see that if I have that 2, 3, 4 is the list. And because of the way lists are built up, you remember IL, if I take the tail of a list, I get the tail of the list. That allows us to use this pattern to actually do it. So back up with our function above, let's scroll back up. What this pattern matching allows me to do is that here I say, okay, match a pattern with the list I was given. If I was given an empty list, just return 0, then match this pattern, which is a head item followed by a tail. Then I'm going to return the value of the head plus the sum of the tail, and recurse through this to calculate it. This combination of pattern matching and recursion is very powerful when it comes to writing code in F# using functional paradigms, because it allows us to get around a lot of the imperative styles that we might use, the for loops and while loops and so on, and build in a very compositional manner. The thing is, we can apply this pattern matching to tuples as well. So if I have a tuple, let's say I have the tuple t, and this is going to be 1, two, three. So now I have this tuple that has one, two, and three. Pattern matching allows me to do stuff like this, which I really, really love. This is very cool. So now I've said let in the tuple pattern A comma B comma C equal T. You can see it actually breaks that out into the values. So now A is 1, B is 2, C is 3. Now if I want to ignore them, I could also say, okay, I only want the third one, so ignore those two and just return C, bind that to T, and you can see then I only get C, that's 3. So recursion, the combination of recursion and pattern matching and all these functional concepts with functions as first class citizens and partially applied or curried functions makes F-sharp very powerful when it actually combines to build a lot of these compositional aspects of systems. When you're composing larger pieces or larger functions from smaller functions. Now the cool thing, this is only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to F-sharp. This is kind of the core essentials of it. There's so much more that we didn't discuss in this video, like discriminated unions and mutual recursive types and so on, that make it even more powerful to take it a step further. Those we'll actually cover in future videos, but I wanted to give you kind of a core rundown of just the core of the F-sharp language, because it's a very cool new language coming to the managed language family with Visual Studio 2010. I really hope you enjoyed this video. We're definitely going to have a lot more F-sharp love coming down into the future, because there's a lot to be excited with this addition to our languages. So until next time, we'll catch you later. Over and out.